WGN. We're joined by Tom Gimbel, the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network. Afternoon, Tom.
Always good to talk to you, John.
So I'm just reading from your LinkedIn. One of the best pieces of advice I ever received came from a terrible manager who I didn't think was a good person when I had just graduated college. I was walking to the kitchen at the office, and the senior vice president of sales said, "Good morning, what's going on?" "Not much, grabbing my coffee," was my reply. My direct manager literally grabbed me by my arms shortly after and pushed me into a conference room. Pick up the story from there, Tom. What happened after that?
He said, "The senior vice president asked you what's going on, and your reply is not much. Why should you even have a job here if there's not much going on?"
Wow.
And whether you're 22 or 52, I think word choice is important, and it's a lesson. Even though I didn't like that manager and quite frankly, didn't always respect him, that advice was true, and you can learn things from people whether you like them or not. And again, word choice is very important in business and in life.
So this may be an example of that, but you're not defending what that manager did to you, are you, today, looking back?
Oh, I don't look at it. Listen, I think it was a little hyper-aggressive? Of course I do. But yeah, I think you're taking something out of context. The point of the story is...
No, you're taking something out of context. This is your story.
Well, and the context of it is, I shouldn't have said what I said.
Yes.
Now, the reaction to what I said reflected on somebody. And the real thing is this, John, is as an employee who had a manager, everything I say reflects not just on me, but on the people I work for. The same way that this guy's behavior reflected on him and the people he worked for, and
sure.
I didn't stay at that company a long time. But everything we say reflects on other people, whether it's a kid reflecting on your parents, a parent saying something reflects on their kids or their spouse, or at work. What you say, John, because you're on the radio, reflects on WGN.
Sure.
What I say reflects on my people and who I've worked with, and it's the same thing. And when somebody asks you what's going on and you say not much, you're not instilling much confidence or much desire of somebody else to want to talk to you more. And that was really the point of my post.
Yeah. Well, then I'll try and see the forest. But the trees we're talking about, it seems to me like that guy acted inappropriately. I mean, that's the sort of reaction you might get disciplined for. And a 22-year-old saying not much, I don't think is such an inappropriate response that it needs to be corrected or corrected aggressively.
Well, it most definitely needs to be corrected.
Really?
Because otherwise people don't learn that word choice matters.
Oh, well, I think that's a bad example of that lesson, because he didn't say not much. It's so quiet here. You can hear a pin drop. He just said not much. It's vernacular.
Right. Well, sometimes vernacular is wrong.
Okay. You know, this is your story, so who am I to tell you, not having known more about this than it took the time for us to discuss it, what was right and wrong in that situation? But
I think your point is valid, and my point was the manager handled it in a way that was a little hyper-aggressive.
Full stop.
But don't lose sight of the fact of, I think this is exactly where society's at an intersection, John. I think it's a great topic today, is that sometimes people handle things wrong in finishing something up, but to only focus on the manager and not focus on what I did wrong is a shift in accountability. And at the end of the day, two wrongs don't make a right. And to say, okay, that guy shouldn't have thrown me into the conference room by my arm and yelled at me. But on the flip side, I learned a lesson that literally 30 years later still rings true, is that when someone says to me, "What's up?" I never say not much. Ever.
You sound scarred to me.
Oh, you sound like you've been affected a little bit by society, John.
I don't know what I am, and I'm going to stop talking to you about this.
Should we criticize John Hughes movies?
I don't know what that means. What's your point there?
It's that behavior in corporate America, as it has in society and the movies, of what we look at today as being too tough or maybe inappropriate versus in the times in which they happened in 1996.
Right.
Or 1994,
I
actually.
Some of those. I grimace.
It's easy to have 2020 hindsight.
Well, it doesn't make 2020 wrong, though. I mean, or 2025 wrong. I mean, we can evolve. We can learn. We can adapt. Look, Tom, this is no big deal, but it just seems to me like the guy grabbing you, throwing you in the conference room, and maybe having a talk to you is not inappropriate. But I also think that the sin that you committed of saying not much to a short question in the hall to a superior, I don't think that was such a teachable moment. You know, I think there would be, I could think of a myriad of things you could have or would have said that would have required a correction. But maybe the guy just whispers to you the next time, or the supervisor says, hey, Tom, help me out here. Next time somebody asks, say something positive rather than something neutral. I don't think what you said was negative. How about that?
I think that sometimes a little bit of emphasis. Yeah. It's like, you know, it comes back to, you know, people say you don't need to use profanity. You never need a basketball or a football coach never needs to raise their voice. A manager doesn't need to ever have negative comments, only positive reinforcements. And I think what this conversation shows more than anything,
yeah,
because you and I are both have a really, you and I get along very well, and I think we're friends.
Oh, we are.
And yet we disagree on something.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's been lost, is that we can cordially disagree. And the great thing about corporate America is if you don't I quit. I didn't like working for that guy when I was 22. And I think that at the end of the day, we can all decide where we want to work and the types of managers we want. But I do think that tough love sometimes is a good thing. And the real difference is, John, I didn't quit because this guy grabbed me by the arm and shoved me in a conference room. I'm 6'5 and weigh 250 pounds, although 30 years ago I was probably about 215, but neither here nor there. But if that guy would have also taken me out for lunch, told me that I was doing a great job, given me positive confidence in other ways, I might have stayed there for 10 years. This was something that he did in a myriad of different ways.
Yeah.
That wasn't a one-time offense.
Tom Gimbel, the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network, has joined us. We have been talking, if you just joined us, about a teachable moment he had where a senior vice president came up to him when he was a young whippersnap and said, how's it going or what's going on? And Tom Gimbel said, not much, grabbing my coffee. And Tom was later reprimanded for not having a more positive or affirming answer. About that conversation, Tom, here's one of the 700 text messages which have poured in. I think it's a good thing to have better word choices. Go, Tom, exclamation point. Next text, Tom is right. Next text, Tom is absolutely right. Next text, John, you are 100% correct here. It's modern-day vernacular. Next one, John, sorry you're wrong. Employee's choice of words was very poor. But here's the best one of all, maybe. Please ask him, that would be Tom, to give an example of what to say when a senior vice president comes up to you by the coffee machine and says, what's going on? How would you respond to that now, Tom, knowing what you know?
A whole lot of good stuff, and can't wait to get my day started.
And can I get you some coffee, sir? I get it.
See, this is exactly wrong, right? It's not about being a brown noser.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. It's not about that. It's not about getting him coffee or being their errand boy or girl. It's about saying with a hint of how was your, you know, coming home to the babysitter, how was your kid? Fine. How was dinner? Your wife asks you, how I made you dinner, or your husband made you dinner, and your spouse says, how was it? Okay. Fine. Word choice matters in every relationship. Word choice matters.
And
to say that it doesn't is a diversionary tactic by somebody who doesn't want to build a strong relationship with others.
John, you're wrong. He's right. Young people today don't understand the art of communication. 847 says Tom's the best. Word choice absolutely matters when you're starting out. I will say that we've handicapped young people for written and verbal skills. Whatever happened with you that many years ago, I'll bet it's even more awkward these days at the coffee machine. Would you suggest or guess that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so.
And I wonder if the, and it sounds like we are coming back to the coffee machines, although listen to this. The Hill reports more than 10% of all jobs that pay $100,000 or more are now available remotely, outlining a requirement for employees to return to work in person at their respective duty stations on a full-time basis. This from the Trump administration, as provided that the department and agency heads shall make exceptions they deem necessary. But in the marketplace in general, they say that there are still six-figure salaries from home. I'm a little hard-pressed to believe that, but what do you know about that, Tom?
Well, I always reverse the numbers. So if there's a little over 10%, that means there's a little under 90% that aren't. And if I said to you, just about 90% of the jobs over 100,000 are in the office, you'd say, heck, compared to a year or two ago, that's a lot. And I would agree. And I think that there's always, what people don't realize is, there's always been remote jobs. There's always been people who work away from corporate headquarters, who travel or what have you, and different situations. This isn't new. What's new is 100% remote. What's new is the majority of people remote. And we're just getting back to a more normal society. And that's the way things are. I think the conversation's actually gonna get a little stale and get to a point where people don't even want to talk about it, because the reality is companies are one community. Well, yeah, shareholder value is what's most important, is how do you create shareholder value?
I wonder if the migration back to the office has happened top down. That is, the president was always there, the company owner was always there, the vice presidents were there. You know, are the last people to come back the lowest on the ladder, or has it not happened that way?
No, I think there were a lot of places, you know, I know a lot of people in the C-suite that were going into the office all the time, but by no means do they get a pass. There were plenty of C-suite people that said, you know what, if it's for the rank and file, it's for me, and I'm not going to do the commute, and I'm going to be home making breakfast for my kids, too. So I think it's been across the board. However, you know, it's when you have the more money you make, the more willing you are to do what you need to do to keep the job. If you're making $40,000 a year, you may say, you know what, if I lose this job, it's not a big deal because there's another one that'll hire me. And that's just pure economics and what's going on with the jobs market. Will those jobs be available to people?
Lots more texts have come in about the beginning of this conversation, and all of them agree with you, so I'm not going to read them. Although... but this one says,
I think you need a vacation in Ottawa, Illinois.
It's the middle of everywhere. The 22-year-old Tom Gimbel was obviously never trained on business speak. Many executives test employees. They're so used to having sunshine blown up their shorts. Anyone who doesn't show over the top excitement stands out. Hang out at a national sales meeting, John, and watch how the salespeople who don't spend much time on the home office make up for lost time when they get in front of the directors and VPs, and maybe they see that for what it is. Interesting conversation today, Tom. Join us next week, okay?
I plan on it, and more good things coming for our Chicago Bears and Ben Johnson. John, don't ever forget, Bear Down.
Tom Gimbel is the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network. This is WGN. John Williams here. Well, so the folks at Deloitte Consulting have once again come out with their retail outlook for the next year. What's retail shopping going to be like, and profits for the retail industry in 2025? If you ask me, I would guess that the retail industry is moving away from matching goods to the masses to delivering hyper-personalized omni-channel experiences. But that's just me. Oh, wait, I don't know what I just said. That's what they said. So let's find out what that means. Here's Matt Adams, a principal at Deloitte Consulting, a retail expert. How are you, Matt? Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, John. Always good to chat with you. I'm doing well. Thanks.
I'm just quoting you to you there. What's the headline? What's the headline here? What's happening in general in 2024 and going to happen in 25?
Yeah, so Deloitte's retail outlook for this coming year is really based on a combination of a view from our economist and financial analysis, and probably most importantly, an executive survey of retail leaders from throughout the industry. And the headline is, from an economist's perspective, we're anticipating 3.1% overall growth But more importantly, for retail industry, 4.7% durable goods growth, which is actually looking pretty promising. So that's a good sign for the coming year. And you illuminated it, I think, with the quote that what we're really seeing is this conversion from what we call mass to micro. It is just the recognition that consumers are expecting much more personalized experiences, much more curated products that are exposed to them. And retailers are really figuring out how to adjust to give consumers what they're frankly demanding and respond to this interest in what's in it for me as an individual.
Sure. What's an example of that then? So how is that literally happening?
You see it a lot across the industry. It comes out through product recommendations,
right,
through tailored promotions or product offerings via social, through promotions that are specific to what you want, whether you knew you wanted it or not. That's the ideal and that's the objective, is make the retail experience, both online and in-store, as specific to you as an individual as possible.
Do people react to that with appreciation, or do they think it's a little creepy?
It is something that you have to pay attention to. Is the creepiness factor is something that comes up when we're having conversations with our retail clients regularly. And increasingly, consumers are expecting it. So it's a little bit generational, but by and large, the top retailing companies and even the social platforms are doing these things that are more customized. So it's becoming more of a consumer expectation. You do have to manage how you expose knowledge about consumers and for that matter, what you even maintain about consumers, because they don't often want you maintaining too much data about them. So there's a line to walk, but if executed correctly, then it feels like you're really adding value to their lives and just making their lives easier, increasing convenience and offering them things that they already know that they want.
This whole conversation has been about online shopping, essentially, right?
No, it goes to in-store too. Is retailers are really thinking about how to digitize a store experience, do things like incorporate digital displays, create more opportunities for you to make it easy to use your phone while you're even in the store to create a seamless connected experience.
Yeah.
So it really does blend at a certain point.
So I was at Macy's before the new at Christmas time. And the one downtown is massive, as you know, and I think it's a really nice store. Boy, they had a lot of stuff, really good prices, shopping for family and whatnot. And I was wandering around four floors looking for stuff. I kind of like that experience, but it certainly wasn't streamlined or personalized. In the future, maybe in 2025, it's going to know that my phone is in the store and it's going to automatically tell me where things are that I might like. Is that the future?
That capability exists. It's really a matter of whether or not you choose to opt into something like that. So it really... Yeah, I think that we're trying, retail industry, retail clients, the companies are trying to give consumers options so that they can have as anonymous an experience as they want or as tailored an experience as they want.
Yeah. Either way, however we choose to shop, is 3.1% growth in retail good? Is 4.7% in durable goods? You started this conversation making it sound like those are positive numbers, right?
Yeah, relative to some of the expectations we've seen in previous years recently, I think it really does paint a pretty promising picture for the retail industry and what we expect out of the economy.
And you also in your report note that people are more interested in value than loyalty, than brand. If I'm a Macy's shopper, I might go to Target just because Target has similar stuff and it's less expensive, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were really three big themes that we saw. The first one is the one that you just mentioned is what we're referring to as value over loyalty. That of the executives that we interviewed, 6 out of 10 of them really thought that was going to dominate the consumer behavior this year, is seeking value, low prices, and more importantly, just feeling like they got a good deal. So retailers are really investing in figuring out how to, again, tailor the promotion scheme to what individuals are looking for and make sure that the promotions are in the hands of the people who really want them. But it's also balanced to a certain extent with creating experience that make people feel like they're getting a good value. So a good in-store experience, good return policies, things like that, good delivery policies, those can contribute to a perception of value as well.
Hmm. Return policies. Boy, especially in this day and age where you might get three of the same thing delivered to your house because you don't know which one you like or fits best. So return policies, I guess there's a number of ways to do that, but that's what you're talking about too, right?
Absolutely. And that speaks to both of the other big themes that we saw. It's making sure that you're executing omnichannel. So you've got a good approach to how you're delivering to consumers and also how they return products, make that convenient and affordable, as well as just executing efficiently. Looking at, you know, really investing in your workforce and make sure that your workforce is trained for the future of retail.
Yeah.
Thinking about your supply chain so that products are in the right place and just making lives easy on consumers and your associates.
Are you calling out stores by name? Who's doing a really good job out there?
We try not to do that. There's a lot of good examples in the industry, and I wouldn't want to miss anyone.
I'll live with that. Matt Adams is a principal at Deloitte Consulting. He's a retail guy. You can find out more at Deloitte.com. Matt, it's nice to talk to you. Thanks for the hello.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it.
WGN. We've got more business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The state of Illinois is reportedly trying to land chipmaker NVIDIA. Bloomberg reports the company made a site visit to the Illinois Quantum and Microelectronics Park in Chicago at the former U.S. Steel site on the south side. NVIDIA makes graphics processing chips used in artificial intelligence software and computers. It's one of the most valuable traded companies in the world. The company hasn't commented on the site visit. IBM has already announced it will have a presence at the park, and the addition of NVIDIA would be a major win for the state. It's hoped the Quantum Park will result in $20 billion worth of investment over the next 5 to 10 years. The University of Chicago has landed a big investment for its research into drugs and treatments. Cranes reports New York-based Deerfield Management has committed up to $130 billion over the next decade to University of Chicago. The life sciences investor has similar partnerships with Northwestern University and University of Illinois. The firm provides expertise and funding for scientists to help them commercialize their research more quickly. I'm Steve Brzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And yesterday we heard the two main reasons egg prices continue to be so darn high are, one, a shortage of eggs because of the tens of millions of hens that have been killed because of the bird flu, and number two,
Americans just love their eggs.
Yeah, demand continues to be high despite the higher prices. But there's a third reason that is adding to what we pay, which we will hear about after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Okay, egg prices continue to be the poster child of inflation. The biggest reason is the bird flu, which has been killing hens by the millions since January of 2022. And inflation itself is a reason.
Oh, yeah. I mean, fuel, feed, labor, packaging, everything went through the roof. All of those inputs for farmers.
That is Mark Dresner, the director of communications at the American Egg Board in Rosemont. He says another factor in higher egg prices are laws in several states requiring hens to be cage-free.
Just shy of 40% of the egg-laying hens in this country are raised cage-free. But more than half of the birds that were impacted or cage-free. It's a smaller slice of the pie that was hit disproportionately.
And also, farmers in states without the cage-free mandate who want to sell eggs in California and the other cage-free states need to spend a lot of money to change operations in order to comply.
And retailers as well that sell exclusively uncaged eggs are going to see a more pronounced impact as a result of avian flu.
Meanwhile, because of factors beyond the control of our poultry farmers, eggs remain the symbol of food inflation.
It has been a very tough time to be an egg farmer.
Can't we find another commodity to pick on for a while besides eggs?
Please do. Please do.
Mark Dresner of the American Egg Board on the food calendar. Oh, look, it's another product requiring eggs. It's National Blueberry Pancake Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
So Michael Edwards is back, president and CEO of the Chicago Loop Alliance. These are the people that keep track of how business and tourism are doing downtown. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Had the folks from the Chicago Street Race on the other day. They're real excited about coming back this July.
Mm-hmm. We are too. Yeah, tourism and big events like that are hugely important for the future of State Street and the Loop.
Yeah, I mean, maybe once upon a time we thought it'll be retail shopping or business community, you know, filling those buildings. But it looks like for the foreseeable future, it's finding unique ways to get people into the town. Is that true?
Yeah, I think you're right. And we were having a discussion this morning. It used to be, you know, in terms of our markets, it was office and then tourism and then residence. And I think that's flipped. It's now tourist, residence, and then office in terms of what we need to put out there in order to attract markets.
So you've got the report from the last quarter of 24. Mm-hmm. This would be winter time, Christmas time.
Yep.
Give me some numbers. What did you see?
Sure. October through December of last year, we had retail sales up almost 4%, which is terrific. And we got the announcement of a couple of new investments in retail. The Gap Factory store is going to be locating on State Street. And we're really pleased that Reckless Records, who I'm sure most of your listeners know about, is moving off the side streets to Wabash, which we think is a good indication. We also had 1.3 million people attend Arts and Culture downtown, generating $354 million in economic impact, which is, as I said before, the secret sauce of the Loop.
When you talk about some of these numbers, 4% up or whatever, that's year over year. Is that what we're talking about?
Yes. I'm sorry. That's a nationwide. That's what has been reported. We've talked to our merchants on the street, and they all said that they had very strong retail sales, and they were just busy with a lot of people coming down and enjoying downtown. So overall, the pedestrian counts were up 10% compared to the fourth quarter last year.
10% of, you have, we've talked about this before, you have, I'm not exactly sure how to describe it. Is it beams that note how many times pedestrians have crossed them? Is it something
that
like
that? That is correct, yes. We have 15 counters up and down State Street at the top of buildings that count pedestrians walking up and down the street.
So 1.4 million average pedestrian impressions in the fourth quarter, and that's how much better than the previous year?
Well, that's up 10%.
And how does that compare to 2019?
To 2019, it's about 12% less than 2019.
Uh-huh. Or put another way, 88% of what it was back then.
Yeah, very good. Yes, 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 exactly.
What else is impressive to you or stands out in this report?
Well, we have major companies making reinvestments in office space. So Canon Design, which is one of our great firms downtown, is recommitting to 39,000 square feet. It's going to create a LEED Platinum certified office building, office space at 225 North Michigan, which we're really happy about. And overall, building permits are down a little bit, the value of them is way up. So pre-2019, we were at $575 million for the fourth quarter. Before the pandemic, and this past quarter, we were at $430 million worth of reinvestment in the Loop.
Is that in part because some of that is just coming off the books? That is, it's transitioning to recreational space or residential space, that those some of the older buildings are just not going to be business places anymore?
That could be happening, but we tend to think it's more higher-valued improvements that building owners are making in order to attract and retain office workers,
yeah.
Amenity packages, those kind of things.
Yeah, I've seen that where we work. 225 North Michigan Avenue, you just mentioned, is a location mm-hmm. with a new investment going in. That would be across from Millennium Park and Grant Park then?
That is across from, it's up the street a little bit farther north, than Millennium Park.
Oh, no kidding.
It's two blocks right. north of Randolph, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. Investment dollars then, what does that mean? Is that the value? That's not the value of the properties, but is that new money coming in?
Yeah,
what does that mean?
That's the value of the building permits that have been issued. So less permits, higher value on those permits. So we're having, there's less activity, but they're major, much more expensive investments in order for these buildings to compete for tenants.
What's your forecast for 25 then?
Well, we're very hopeful. We think all of these are big events that you started the interview with, you know, they're coming back. We're going to be adding some things to State Street that should make it an even better place to come and enjoy being a part of Chicago.
And you would be interested in State Street because it's the Chicago Loop Alliance that we're talking
yes.
about. So that's the part of the downtown that is interested, that you're most interested in. State Street was becoming more of an event space, closing off the mm-hmm. streets and doing things like that. Are we going to see more of that, or is it going to be something different?
Yeah, I think you will see more of that as we move forward. But, you know, with your past interview that you just had in terms of value, State Street's always been the street that's filled with retail value for folks as opposed to maybe high-end shopping. And so we're really excited about some of these new opportunities that are going to be coming back to State Street. We do think retail will be stronger at the end of this coming year than it was this year.
What's a Gap Factory store?
So Gap Factory store is an outlet store. So it has all the merchandise that you would want at a typical Gap at a lower price.
And is that going to be on State, did you say?
It'll be at 17 North State Street.
Interesting. Michael Edwards,
yeah.
President, CEO, Chicago Loop Alliance. Check in again with us soon. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
You bet.